Penguin Random House Audio presents A Map for the Missing by Belinda Huijin Tong. Read for you by Austin Koo. For My Waipo. Who on his own has ever really known who gave him life? Since you ask me, yes, they say I am his son. Homer, The Odyssey. They don't want to create a place for themselves in history. They want to create themselves. Wang Anyi, The Song of Everlasting Sorrow. Part 1. Lao Jia, Ancestral Home. Chapter 1. January 1993.
你爸不见了.
Translated directly, the words mean, your father can't be seen. His mother's voice shouts again.
你爸不见了.
Your ba's gone missing. He is in his office in the math department of the university, the echo of the phone's ring jarring against the silence of the hall, tense with the purposeful air of research. This has never happened before. Because of the expense of international calls, he has always been the one to make the calls that would travel the Pacific.
你在吗?
She asks. The shock of hearing her voice and of what she says has rendered him speechless. At last, he forces a sound out of his mouth. Yes, Ma, I'm here. The cratered receiver pressed to his ear, he does a calculation. It is late afternoon in Palo Alto, which means that in China, it is hardly even morning. In order to call him, she would have had to rise in the stillness of night and walk the 15 li to town, leaving the frozen dirt roads of their village, going farther and farther until she reached the township's main avenue, which, even at that hour, would still be dark and quiet, the determination of women preparing their storefronts visible only through shadow. At the forlorn train station, she would have asked one of the half-asleep passengers which direction to board, and then when she reached the city, she'd have to question a stony-faced city dweller to read the signs illegible to her. Not until she reached the telecommunications building, almost 3 hours later, would she have been able to finally make the call. At this realization, his stomach tumbles down and down. He grasps for the cushioned arm of his desk chair, for its comfort, for its familiarity. Her words are so frantic that he must take a moment to hold the receiver away from his ear, put it aloft in the empty air. She'd never been shaken of the belief that her voice had to be made very loud in order to travel across a phone line, much less the distance of the Pacific Ocean. The more she yells, the more he begins to fear the entire math department will hear her through his office walls. He stuffs the receiver into the thick sleeve of his sweater to muffle the sound. Finally, he calms her enough to hear her explain. His father left home 2 mornings ago, she says, shuffling out of the courtyard with a plastic bag knotted in a bow over his wrist, as if planning on a day trip. He hasn't returned. She assumed he'd merely gone to a nearby village, perhaps to see a relative or an old army friend. But to believe this, she admits, she had to put aside her doubts about why he'd do such a thing. His father hadn't taken a trip out of their village in years. He inhales deeply. He promises his mother he will come home. He was startled for the second time by the pattering of knuckles against his office door, then the voice calling out, in that tentative tenor he heard so often in America, thick with its awareness of the possibility for intrusion.
Hey?
Yi Tian looked up from his hands, twisted until the skin had risen to a red and white mottle, and was surprised to find that the light in his office was already softening with the sunset. He hadn't realized it was so late. Stephen Xiang stood at the doorway, apprehensive, leather messenger bag dangling from his shoulder. On the corner of Yi Tian's desk, the phone was still dangling off its cord.
I was about to leave, but I just wanted to pop in and ask if everything is all right. I heard your voice earlier, and I wanted to come check.
Oh, nothing's wrong. It was obvious by their twin accents, Stephen's only becoming audible at the ends of difficult words, Etienne's ever present, that the two of them could have conversed more comfortably in Chinese. But Etienne had followed the lead Stephen set when they first met. Stephen was an earlier arrival to their department, having come to America from Taiwan about a decade before Etienne. Speaking to their American colleagues, Stephen made appropriate jokes at the appropriate times. When he pronounced Etienne's name, the syllables were filtered through Stephen's attempt to make them American, and the result was strange, like dough kneaded flat and then remade in an unfamiliar shape. Etienne didn't even know Stephen's Chinese name. When Etienne saw Stephen's eyes linger questioningly on the phone receiver, he scrambled to put it back on the cradle. "My mother called." It seemed impossible to avoid speaking about the call now, but he wanted to describe it in the simplest, vaguest terms he could find. "I may need to go back home and help with my father." Stephen looked at him with the same weariness he'd worn the first time they'd met, and then, to Etienne's surprise, strode to the door, nudged it shut with his foot, and set his bag down. The department's practice was to keep their offices open, to foster collegiality, the chair had said gently, when he asked Etienne if he would mind not closing his, so that Etienne often had the sensation of being observed. Stephen sighed and leaned against the desk. "It always happens like this at their age, the call, and then you find out there's some sudden illness." His Chinese was less refined than Etienne expected. "It will be fine. The chair is quite flexible with things like this, and he'll help find someone to cover your class for a few weeks if you need to go. You don't know this yet, but we're actually quite lucky in this department." Stephen began to tell him of his own mother, who'd suddenly been diagnosed with ovarian cancer 2 years previously and whom he now had to regularly travel back to Taiwan to care for. Etienne listened dully as he spoke about the hospitalizations, the home aid they'd hired, the emergency trips he had to take back to Taipei, the feeling of heaviness that weighed constantly upon him. This was the most Stephen had ever spoken to him, aside from once when he and his wife invited Etienne and Ma Li over for dinner, an awkward affair where Etienne realized that he had little in common with Stephen's elegant family from Taipei, who could trace their ancestry all the way back to royalty in the Ming Dynasty. Etienne had stayed quiet, only saying that he was from a village in Anhui, then allowing Ma Li to describe her childhood in a Hutong home in Beijing, which he supposed they'd better understand. They'd all spoken English, and Stephen's wife had ordered takeout that she had no qualm serving to them directly from their little paper boxes. He understood that he and Ma Li weren't considered important guests. At the door and saying their goodbyes, there had been insistences that they had to do it again, but no one ever followed up. Neither then nor now had Etienne been able to tell Stephen that he hadn't been back to China since leaving 8 years previously, or that he hadn't returned to his own village in 15. He feared the questions that would come after the telling. Stephen would surely have expressed confusion about why he hadn't been home in so long. He would have assumed that Etienne was a son, part of a family back in that place, home, with a set of duties toward his parents. This understanding of obligation as the core of one's being was their shared culture. How could Etienne explain that he'd failed in his fundamental duties to his father for 15 years and hadn't even spoken to him in all that time? Stephen wouldn't understand. "It'll be all right," Stephen said, finishing his story. Etienne realized he'd hardly listened to a word. "Thank you," Etienne said. "Don't worry, okay?" Stephen smiled. His eyes crinkled behind his polished glasses, ones that Etienne had seen actors wear in movies from the 60s. Etienne could see that his older colleague felt proud of the advice he'd given, the support he'd shown to a fellow countryman. The easiest thing to do was nod. How could he express that he himself didn't even know what kind of help he needed? After Stephen left, Etienne stuffed all his papers into his backpack and headed to his car.
Normally.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?